CliffCentral.com.
Download the Cliff Central app, available now on the Apple App Store and Google Play Store.
Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show. This week we have a very exciting guest joining us just now. If you haven't been following on Twitter or Facebook, then you'll have to just wait and see who he is. But we'll be bringing him in a bit later on. As always, B2.
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going?
Yeah, man. Great to be here.
Huh? So look, you look tired. Have you had a heavy week? It's already been, what, 6 hours?
I'm busy, bro. I'm busy. It waits for no one.
No, I know. I know how you feel, though. It just seems to be like in winter, things kind of come alive. It's a bit nuts, eh?
At least we're past the solstice, eh? So days start to get longer, apparently.
Apparently. Did you see what time the sun came in this morning? I don't know about getting longer.
It was annoying.
Anyway, as usual, app of the week.
Yes.
I've actually had a lot of fun with this app this week. It's called Malevich. I'm actually going to spell that exactly. It's Malevich, so M-A-L-E-V-I-C-H, Malevich, Malevich, I don't know. But what it is, it's an app that you take a photo or one of your photographs, and then instead of choosing filters like on Instagram or any of the others, what you do is you choose an artwork from one of the greats, the Picassos, the Renoirs, and so on and so on, and it overlays the treatment or style of that photo onto your photo. Now, what was quite clever about it from a monetization point of view, because I always look at apps and I think to myself, well, you know, is it free? Is it paid? If it's paid, what do you get? If it's free, what do you get? And they give you one picture a day free. So you can use the app and you can get the results and all those good things. But then when you select the artwork, it obviously goes back to a server to be processed. And I'll share up on Twitter. I did one with Picasso. So I now actually own a Picasso. But when it goes to be processed, then it says, if you want to have this picture in 5 minutes, pay 99 cents now. So you can actually speed it up. It's that whole hurry up and wait. And then also, as I said, you're limited to one a day. So if you want to do more, then you can buy like packs. Just a bit of warning, you need to play with it, because I took some pictures. So like if you're smiling and your teeth are all out on show, and you choose like a... which was the one I chose, a Matisse or something like that, and your teeth kind of look a bit cuck, they go like a bit blurry and that, and your eyes go a bit weird, so you want to play with it and get to use it. But I did a structure. I took a picture that I'd taken of a building in Sydney, and then I ran it through a Picasso, but like an entropy style, so turned it down into cubes.
That's
pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, cubism. It was cool. Nice. So it was very nice. I put that up on my Instagram page, Fat Cat Brett.
So you got to tweet this photo now.
I'll probably tweet my Picasso because it was a self-portrait. But
awesome.
I will send that out. I'll put that on Twitter just now.
And just for those of you that have never seen B1, he doesn't normally look like a Picasso.
I'm much better. Ask my mommy. So,
Bass for radio.
That was nice. So that was the app of the week. Then I found something that I know the older at heart or those that have been forced to watch their parents' movies will love. If anyone is a Monty Python fan, Brett, you must have seen The Holy Grail. Okay. Do you remember the scene in The Holy Grail with the knights when they had their coconuts, when they went running?
Yes.
So there's a company come out called Trotify, and they've made this contraption that you put onto the front brake of your bicycle with coconuts, and as you ride, it trots. It makes the trotting sound. Apparently, they've sold out already. You have to go to their website and like order for the next batch, and they're probably handmade or something, and they're coconuts. But it's called Trotify, and I had to share that.
For those days when you really, really want your bike to sound like a horse.
Yeah, but do you remember how we used to put like playing cards inside our wheels that sound like a motorbike? So now you get Trotify.
Okay.
I could just see this going down in Holland, like where everyone's driving bikes. You just see how these horse invasions, like this mess. But and I actually went and watched the scene again on YouTube of We Are the Knights That Say Nee.
Yes.
So
and it's just a flesh wound.
It's just a flesh wound.
I am the Black Knight. No, it's fantastic. My favorite was the ending.
No, don't give it away.
Yeah, I know.
Can't
I'm not going
it.
To.
I've only seen it like 500 times.
But for those of you that do, it's the best thing ever is to just watch to the end with someone who's never seen it before and just watch them watch it.
Yeah.
I love that.
The Holy Grail.
Yeah.
So that was Trotify.
Yeah.
Then very cool. We were talking about Google and Apple and all those great things. And we're going to be talking about Google again later.
Yes.
But Bang & Olufsen, B&O, the headsets and speakers and that, they announced that they've done a deal with Google. I think it's only two pairs of their headsets. It's the 35 or something. I don't know. It's called the BO Ground or BO Sound 35 and Essence or something. Yeah. They've integrated Google Cast into the headset. So it's a wireless headset.
Okay.
And then it's got Cast. So Spotify, TuneIn, all those things will now stream to your headset directly when your headset's on the same wireless
network. It's not a Bluetooth headset.
No, it's not Bluetooth. Okay. It's using the Wi-Fi Cast. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's auto. You basically hit the button, push play, and it'll pick it up.
And it's going to sound good. It's B&O.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So big up to them. It's nice to see guys actually starting to take the tech and integrate it into like.
And there's long-standing brands as well. There's ones that have like got their name already in like high fidelity sound and actually playing now in the new digital space. It's really cool. Innovation's got to follow all suits.
You've got to think though, it's probably because of the no-name brands that these guys are getting like a bit of a scrick.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, look at the watch industry. With what's happening in smartwatches, no one is buying luxury watches anymore. And now you're seeing the Tag Heuers of the world partnering with Swatch to make a smartwatch, you know? So it's very interesting to see how innovation is causing
disruptive.
The old brands.
It is disruptive. That's the great thing about it at the moment. Everybody gets disrupted.
At least they're coming to play, which is nice. Guys, the phone number is 0861-555-189. You can get us on Twitter and Facebook and WeChat.
Hashtag Futurology.
Thank you. All right, so we always talk about VR, and you know what? It's not going away, and I don't think there's going to be a week that I don't talk about VR. In fact, this year in San Francisco, there's the second year of the VR show.
Yeah.
It used to be part of CTIA. It's now its own show. It only has VR vendors. So it's basically the statement that this is not Mickey Mouse. This
virtual reality is becoming a reality.
It's becoming a reality. In fact, it's becoming an everyday reality.
Yeah.
What I thought was unbelievable.
What you thought was unbelievable?
No, well, what I'm about to say now,
which
I thought, I suppose punctuation.
Nice, yes.
We've got a couple of those to share when we could put the pen is. The
let's
pen
have grandma for dinner.
Let's have a slate here. There was a big mobile brand that put a billboard up that said, The penis is mightier than the sword or something like that. We're talking about the pen.
Yes.
So basically, this company or Varsity, I can't remember who it was, in Iowa, in one of the flyover states in America, have realized that there are over 200 ATV, all-terrain vehicles, quad bikes, accidents a year, just in Iowa. Okay.
Wow.
Now, a lot of people go like, where's Iowa? That's my point. 200 a year in Iowa alone. And they've used virtual reality and a quad bike simulation to get people to ride and see how they would, inverted commas, fall off. What they're doing in this ride, like are they coming down a descent or they're going up the hills the wrong way. And by that and that learning, we'll be able to try and maybe build stabilizers or at least educate people as to how to be safer on ATVs.
Cool.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know, I've always heard guys say that ride bikes, I personally don't. I mean, I'd love to, but I don't. But they've always said that a four-wheeler, an ATV, is like 10 times more dangerous than a bike, because when you wipe off a bike, you lose the bike.
Yeah.
But when you come off an ATV, you stay with it. And that's when it crushes your legs and it burns
heavy.
You and it's heavy, etc.
Yeah.
So,
ask Ozzy.
But using virtual reality
to
combat a real serious problem. So the findings that they're going to get from this, they'll be able to share and publish and hopefully make the sport a bit safer, which, I think that's pretty cool. And it's a nice real world application of VR. Staying with VR.
Yes.
So we've talked about the Hyperloop before. For those of you that haven't heard that show or don't know, the Hyperloop is that supersonic train capsule thingamajiggy that's going to rocket you from like 0 to 107. Brett, you've got the stats on the Hyperloop. You're laughing at me, but
it's fast.
it's guy fast.
Yeah. So it's one of Elon Musk's things
yes,
that he's actually
right.
put together.
I mean,
it's been in discussion for ages, but he's actually put it together, and I think it's called a pneumatic tube transportation system. So I don't know enough about it either, really, but it's almost like a vacuum tube that links one point to the other and basically allows for frictionless travel.
Yes.
And really, really quick.
What's it, 700 miles or something?
Let me just check exactly.
I was talking like four and you were correcting me as I was speaking the last time. That's what I'm saying. I'll come back to you.
No problem. I'll check it exactly, but it'd be about 35 minutes for 350 miles.
Yeah,
so
that's ridiculous.
So fast.
That's 700 miles an hour. Now, the problem, or not the problem, but the challenge with inside the Hyperloop is that you're sitting in a tube in darkness with no view or anything, and a lot of people get sick when they can't see travel. So using augmented reality, which is pretty much the basis of virtual reality, they're going to be putting, or they're thinking about putting screens inside next to the seats that would simulate windows. But what they've done is using augmented reality tracking of your eyes, mm-hmm. where you looking will give you the right angle of what you should be seeing outside.
Yeah.
So you're not just getting like a picture of the desert. It will be moving the same as you moving in the same angle that you would be looking if you were looking outside a window.
Jeez.
Now that's...
Imagine how you could mess with people's minds though. Like you literally just put them into like some sort of actuated tube with
screens. I'm thinking of filling water.
And you just have a crowd of human beings just change the environment behind them and just get out
the same place.
There's
a Halloween ride. You ride the Hyperloop and then all of a sudden a tidal wave starts coming at you and you're sitting inside this...
Well, great opportunity zombies. For augmented reality marketing. So pigeons, there you go, advertisers.
Yeah, come on. Walking Dead season 374,001. you can have like zombies coming at the coming through at the Hyperloop station. The science
life
is
and
approaching
death at the speed of sound.
So, I mean, it's just another real application for augmented reality. So, yeah. Apple. We spoke about Apple last week. We've spoken about the Panama Papers. Mm-hmm. And if you put those two together, I came across a dung moment. Yeah, I came across a little snippet. Apparently, you have to say apparently for legal purposes, mm-hmm. but it's been suggested that
alleged.
Apple's holding $181 billion offshore,
awesome.
Non-declared. Now, that is enough to change the world's poverty threefold. We could eradicate worldwide poverty three times. With that money. That's
and give everybody an iPhone.
Yeah, but you couldn't afford the data. So, you know, when I first came across the story and I was chatting to my business partner about it, because he knows that I'm a bit of a fanboy. It's like, I think he tries to find snippets that are attacking Apple. He was, you know, we were saying, yeah, but you know, they actually won't get into trouble for a simple reason. If they doing it, and I'm not suggesting and I'm not being liable or anything like that, but if they doing it, then there's a very good chance that the other global brands, we don't have to mention the names,
sure.
everyone knows who a global brand is. You know, these guys are trading in markets all around the world. Why bring your money back if you don't have to? Why declare it if you don't have to? And I say that inverted commas, but then make sure no one catches you out.
But that's kind of the thing as well. So there's regulation, but Apple have got a physical address, and so does Google. But then you look at something like Facebook. Yes, they've got a head office, but their operation is global. Which law then defines how they engage or what tax avoidance are they doing?
Yeah, you see.
So that's the question I ask: is how do you actually? Which law is going to get them? And because there's a bit of gray area between where you're actually operating.
It is interesting, but I think you know where I do feel. Bad as such. It's
great
for the
place to be in Bermuda and Panama and stuff because
well,
I mean, they're getting the benefit. Yeah.
But I mean, take the shareholders. These are guys that have bought shares, have helped the company build and become what it is. And I'm not talking about Apple, not any company. And they do it for the simple process of dividends. I mean, let's be honest, that's why you own shares.
Yeah.
This is $181 billion of non-paid dividend earnings. I mean, that's quite significant. So, I mean, Brexit's like a walk in the park compared to the kind of stuff that's going to come out in this wash. Because what does that do for currency movement, you know, and the freedom of movement of currency and transacting around the world? You know, bring on Bitcoin and blockchains and all those type of things.
Well, you're going to need some sort of thing like that. We were talking about Bitcoin in the office the other day, and Bitcoin's actually, if Bitcoin, the coin itself, was actually made out of gold, it would be... less, it would be more volatile than if it just stayed virtual. So that kind of puts Bitcoin up at commodity level. And I don't know if you saw, but the Facebook guys, what are their names?
The Facebook guys?
You know, they're trying to screw Zuckerberg at the beginning, the twins.
I've
gone blank. Anyway, it'll come to me now. They've started a commodity trading company in New York with Bitcoin, which is really, really clever. And they're actually starting to turn it into this value, this really push this value, which is quite cool. But yeah, that's another discussion for another.
Yeah, well, I've actually been seeing a lot of people saying
I want a Bitcoin though,
like with Brexit. Yeah,
I really do. I've seen those pictures of the Bitcoin.
Yeah,
I really want one of them.
Well, that's probably easier to get than a real Bitcoin. It's probably cheaper.
Yeah, I don't want the QR code. I don't want the Zapper code.
I want that whole long BitChain. But but you know, if when, you know, just staying with money and future and Bitcoins and that, you know, when you think about what's happened with Brexit,
yeah,
you know, the euro itself could become an endangered species.
Yeah.
So, you know, surely it makes sense to have things like Bitcoin, where your currency, doesn't matter what government makes what decision, your money is your money and you can transact however you and the trade decide. So I really, really believe that we need to follow Bitcoin a lot more carefully. And I think if anything's keeping bankers up at night, it's going to be those type of cryptocurrencies, because they can't track it, they can't trace it, and they can't play in it. It's not their world. Anyway, so another little interesting snippet from the week, and definitely something that's going into the future. Do you know Barnes & Noble's, the bookstore?
Yes.
Okay. So if you ask any young people nowadays,
they're still selling books.
There's my point. Like, people go, what are books? You know?
Yeah.
They had a thing called the Nook, N-O-O-K, Nook, Nook. I say potato, you say potato.
Yeah.
It didn't do well. Kindle took that space over. Everything moved to apps, that you could have a Kindle app on your iPad and so on. So the Nook itself as a device, and I can't fault it, I don't know it, I haven't played with it, but Barnes & Noble invested in the Nook, and that was their ebook reader, and you got benefits from using their reader and their ebooks and so on.
Yeah.
They've had to do an about turn because they've been so focused on ebooks and this specific device. What's happened is that market has changed as well. People aren't buying ebooks. The sales actually down quite a lot. So they sat down, they've reinvented themselves, and the article that I read, it was in Time. Yeah. They're going to start fine dining. Now, if you've gone into a Barnes & Noble, there's a beautiful one in New York. I don't know which street and which grid, but it's one of the original ones. They've got this lovely coffee shop. It's warm and it's got sun coming in. You grab a book off the shelf, you buy it, you buy a cup of coffee and you sit there and you read for a while. You get lost. They're talking about making the areas like 3 or 4 times that size.
That's cool.
And fine dining, proper restaurants,
so
wine,
creating
beer.
An experience around the product.
Correct. But so the book is just, you can come there, you can sit for a meal, have a good glass of wine. You know, because like people say, oh, I'd love to get a glass of wine and cuddle up with a book. You hear people saying that. No, you can't. Well, you can't cuddle. Well, maybe you can cuddle up. I don't know.
Hey, there's a whole other tangent there they could explore. But that's kind of what digital has been doing to bricks and mortar for the last sort of decade.
Yeah.
These guys have been saying, well, and it started with the look and listens and the musicers and all the hard and fast tangible music stores. How do we get people to actually come to our stores and buy CDs rather than download? The Napster effect has broken people wanting to collect CDs.
Yeah.
And then the convenience of things like iStore and iMusic and all these things and these subscription-based content services. How do these guys make people come to their store? And it's about creating an experience. And it's great to see that Barnes & Noble are doing that. I mean, it's something that Scoobs has been doing for a while in Monte Cassino.
Yeah, I mean, we enjoy them a shout out.
We enjoy going there. I mean, you can go get a nice, you can get, the wife loves it for the champagne.
But they've got that thing upstairs, correct.
Yeah. And there's a guy playing piano and you can read a book and probably never buy it anyway.
There's the problem. I think that's where the model's wrong. Like, even you mentioned Scoobs, and I think Scoobs is a great example of a bookstore. Yeah. But even the exclusive books that have done deals with like Seattle Coffee or Faygo, whoever it is, it's like kind of next to it.
Yeah.
But what they've done that's clever is there's those beep beep machines, the anti-theft machines.
Yes.
So you can't take the book into the coffee store. One, the coffee store is a separate entity.
Yeah.
I mean, you transact separately, whereas with Barnes & Noble, it will obviously be internal.
Yeah.
But more importantly, you have to buy the book or the magazine or the newspaper.
Yeah.
So now guys are going, I feel like a cup of coffee, be nice to read a newspaper or buy a book, whatever, and their sales have probably gone up. So Barnes & Noble is going to have to look at that as well to stop people just bringing the book into that area, reading it, which damages the book effectively, and then walking out.
Immediately increased your chances of selling a tangible book by having the people in the books in the same place at the same time.
I suppose you're going to want to finish it as well. You're going to start reading and you go, well, you know what, meal's over, but I'm not going to leave the book, let me buy it.
Come for the meal, stay for the book, or the other way around.
It could be quite interesting.
For sure.
I think it was on today's newsletter for Cliff Central.
Yeah.
In fact, I do think it was, but I'd read it before I saw it this morning. In Switzerland, the Fellatio Cafe is opening at the end of the year. This, I do a not safe for work announcement at the moment. It's going to be the most expensive cup of coffee in Switzerland at about £40. But once you have received your cappuccino or your flat white or maybe your frothed white, I'm not sure, it comes, yeah, you, they give you an iPad, you choose your performer, for lack of a better description, and you get the happy ending. So your coffee, you will, you, they're pretty much guaranteeing you will leave with a smile. I mean, not many coffee shops can say we'll put a smile on your face.
I hope there's a suggestion box at the end.
So
at the exit.
So yeah,
that's pretty wild. Where'd you say that was?
Cool. So basically, yeah, that's.
What are the most critical requirements for companies in today's business environment? Communications and technology. Comms. From internet connectivity to voice and cloud platforms to the latest IT solutions and more, iConnect ensures maximum uptime and productivity with a reliable connection as well as the necessary support and backup. Go to iConnectSA.co.za for more information. That's iConnectSA.co.za. iConnect, the one provider to manage all your communications.
Well, we're back, and I said at the start of the show that we have a special guest today, and it, I must say it's quite weird that I'm sitting in this seat and my guest is sitting in that seat, because it's no other than Gareth Cliff.
Yeah, I've been on, I was on with Audrey on earlier, so I'm sorry, I can't say this is a unique thing going on today.
At least you're getting it all done in one day and you get it over with.
Aren't you going to switch Brett's
microphone?
No,
we don't
want
to speak to
Brett. Hey.
I wanted to keep you to myself.
Well, at least I'm on a show where you guys talk about stuff that is always exciting to me.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
That's great
and
to hear.
And you do better and in different ways to everyone else.
Thanks very much. I appreciate that.
As long as people are listening and they're enjoying it, we'll keep doing it.
Well, I believe we have a first. This is the first time we're going to chat about your trip since you've got back.
Yeah, I spoke about it on my show a couple of times, but you know, never from the point of view of what you guys are particularly interested in. And I think you're referring to one or both of the trips, because I did South by Southwest in March.
Yes.
And then in May, I was in Silicon Valley.
Yes.
Where we did quite a lot of travel and meetings. It was just jam-packed with really incredible experiences. So what do you want to know?
I want to talk about Silicon Valley. South by Southwest is cool, but there's not that much from a tech side point of view there. I mean, they have the tech integration in that.
Sure.
But what really intrigued me about your trip, and this is what I wanted to chat to you about, I've been to Google. So when I walked around Google, I saw very different things, I would believe, than what you saw. I was going there as a tech propeller head, looking at RAID servers and how many lights were flashing and speeds and the fact that it takes like 10,000 cores for each search. I don't know if you were really looking at things like that.
I don't even know what that is.
You see. So
you're just saying words, Brett. Come on.
Okay, so let me elaborate. If when you've heard of someone buying a Pentium 2 with a 4-core processor, to do a search, it takes 10,000 cores. That means like 2,000 times the number of computers you have in your office to do one search.
Right.
That's the size of Google's search engine. So, you know, when we went through Google, and I'm going back about 4 years ago, we went very technical. We were looking at server speed. We were looking at how the algorithms worked. Probably the kind of stuff that would bore most of the listeners.
But that is the stuff that made Larry Page, first of all, had him recognized as the genius that he is. Mm. And second of all, what is the backbone of Google?
Yep.
You know, the second most valuable company in the world.
Which is the first? Apple.
Apple, yeah.
Did you hear what we just said about Apple now?
I did.
In the Panama Papers.
It's going to be interesting. They might not be the first most valuable company.
But it was interesting because you get to see, also there was a timeline of Google searches that they put up on the wall that's actually been drawn up by staff over years, and they do it by hand.
Oh, wow.
So they've got a little chart that every year, they had to squeeze the chart down by an order of magnitude in order to show the volume.
Moore's law
as time
of exponential
correct.
Increase. That's great.
And Moore's law applies obviously in exactly the same direction here, but it applies rather inversely when it comes to the cost of these things.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that Google will never divulge precisely where or how big their actual
service
infrastructure is, because
I don't think they can completely tell you where it is either.
No, well, there's part of it in Ireland. Yeah. There's wherever it's cheapest, pretty much.
You know that dark side of the moon we never get to see?
Yeah, that's probably full of Google servers, right?
I can share a little bit of light on that, because I asked the questions, and when the guys like politely said no, afterwards, the one guy came up to me and said, look, I can give it a little bit of an insight. Mm-hmm. The whole secret to Google, and did you see the original Google computers? Did they take...
It's in the, they've got like a museum they set up there, right?
So for the listeners that haven't been fortunate to go there, the original Google computers were normal computers like we have. They're Pentium-based machines. They were all linked through a whole series of algorithms and the cables between them mm-hmm. that made them do the work of a gazillion machines. And that's right. what search was. So when I spoke to the guy, he said, with RAID technology. So what RAID does, RAID copies servers. So one server is copying the other the whole time, hence the mm-hmm. name RAID. They have these server farms all over the world, and they're raiding each other the whole time. So mm-hmm. what they've started doing is saying, when you're not working and when you're not doing what you're supposed to be, which is ultimately backup, mm-hmm. then you do the search. So they actually move their search energy. And they also then obviously look at the closest line. So a South African search is not going to happen in America. Well, not, but potentially shouldn't.
Well, I mean, potentially it could be happening in the cloud, and that server could be located anywhere.
Correct.
That's what's going
it's
on
a,
now.
A computer somewhere else in the cloud.
Yeah. Did you slide down the slide into the...
No.
Didn't you?
No, I didn't. Okay. You know what? We tried not to do too much of the tech tourism stuff because there were a lot of business questions. You must remember I was on a trip with 22 other young South African entrepreneurs. These people were interested in scaling up their businesses. That's awesome. They were interested in talking to people about cloud servers and about Google Fit and about Google Home and about all the different developments on a business front that That's they're cool. doing. So we spoke to a couple of really interesting people. There was a guy talking about the Google Cloud and kind of how their different operating systems for that have come along and how they've evolved.
Yeah.
They also spoke quite a lot about the cloud and how that's changed everything. And, you know, Amazon are competitors for the primacy in that environment as much as they are. There was a lot of really interesting discussion around how it is that all of this integrates into three particular areas that I think everybody in Silicon Valley is talking about at the moment. The first one is the Internet of Things.
Yes.
So when we get to a stage where your fridge can tell you your fridge can tell your cell phone that you need milk and bread and you probably need 3 cans of Coke, and your phone will then buzz you on your way home
when it knows
you're 15 minutes away from home because of geotagging. It'll be able to tell you, and it'll go off at that moment, and you go, oh, I'm just about to turn into the shops, this is perfect. You'll go into the shops, buy the things your fridge needs, or your fridge will just order them and they'll be delivered.
Yeah.
In the ideal world, you won't even have to worry about that stuff.
This is why I think we're going to turn into those funny people from Wally. In the year 2029, yes, we're all going to have these blobs of humanity.
Just, and we'll just be pushed around on hovering mechanisms.
The neediness
powered
of
by Google.
So there's the Internet of Things. The other one is artificial intelligence. Yeah, obviously, the smarter they get. And I know you guys have spoken about this a couple of times. But what's exciting there is also the way that artificial intelligence is being seen as a little bit threatening by people like Musk. I think Sergey and Larry have both said that they're quite worried about this too. You know, the only person I've found who's completely not concerned is Neil deGrasse Tyson, who says we are going to be fine because we can pick up when, you know, we need to not and don't allow these machines to manipulate and change their own source code.
Yeah.
Then we know we're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah.
But others have said that, for example, we will grow alongside this artificial intelligence to the point where we'll be codependent on each other.
Yeah.
And you'll almost have a meeting of bio and tech.
Yeah.
Not quite
the singularity yet, but...
But in a very real way. I mean, there's a guy who I saw speak at South by Southwest. He's a professor of anatomy and physiology who's also involved very much in technical stuff. He's developed a chip which is already operable that can improve your memory.
Wow.
Which interfaces between, and this will solve Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and all of these diseases.
And Silicon Valley weed smokers, that's fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And people, I mean, ultimately what we want is for the machines to let us live forever.
Exactly.
And we eliminate health problems and we eliminate any of the day-to-day animal things that hold us back so we can be completely creative.
Yeah.
And we can think for a living. And all the work, the manual labor, will be done by machines.
Exactly.
So the third thing is robotics.
Yes.
There are also, you know, other areas that people are interested in talking about right now. Virtual reality is obviously a big thing, but it's almost a side branch to those three that I've just brought up now. So that's where the focus is in Silicon Valley. And you can see everybody's looking for the next big thing.
Yeah. It was quite interesting. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I just wanted to, did you go through to the hydroponics and medical facility in Google? Because not many people get taken there.
No, I didn't. Okay. I would have loved to see
that. Did you, Brett?
Yeah, I did. it's incredible. So
what happens?
Know, everyone thinks that Google's just about search. You know, you Google it and AdWords and that.
They're buying up businesses every day.
Well, this is the thing. They've looked at exactly what you're saying with the chips and preservation of human health and so on. They have a medical and hydroponics facility there. It's like right in the north or south side of the campus. I mean, the stuff that these guys are doing in the engineering. In fact, the day I was there were people picketing outside because it's not natural and it's, you know, Google's changing things.
Ethicists.
And I was just thinking now the creationists must love this whole chip concept as well. You can just imagine.
I mean, if we live forever, you don't need God. Yeah. Well, that's the truth.
Yeah, no, it's true.
The moment humans can control their own destiny to the point of mortality not being an issue, what do you need an afterlife for? And if there isn't an afterlife, what do you need that the afterlife can promise you that you can't get yourself here?
Wow. Okay.
On the flip side of that, if AI gets to a point where they realize robots realize they don't need us, what's the point of
robots
us anyway?
But then the robots become God, so it counts God out either way.
Awesome. So now you were there.
This is awesome. It's like looking in a mirror with a mirror behind you.
That infinite regression.
How is this going to work?
And it's an infinite regression because that's the whole problem with you know, even mysterious old cults and current religions, is that actually they're just an infinite regression looking the opposite direction.
And when the echoes of the songs of the folklore and all that dies down, it doesn't mean anything anyway.
Absolutely.
Well, you could actually Google it and download it again. Well,
we spoke about AI this year as well. We've spoken about a number of things, but AI, Marvin Minsky was the founder or creator of artificial intelligence or some of the laws that we've got around it. And he died this year in January, and that's why we picked up AI quite early on this year. One of his great quotes was, no computer that has ever been designed is more aware than we are. No computer has ever been designed that is ever aware of what it's doing, but most of the time we aren't either. And that's the interesting thing. So if they aren't aware of themselves, it's not going to be a problem.
But that's to do with whether or not you're sentient, right?
Yes.
And it doesn't matter. If you optimize a machine to make paperclips, it could eventually destroy the earth in order to make paperclips.
Yes.
It could look at humans and see raw materials for paperclips. Yeah. But it won't ever know that it's doing right or wrong.
But it's always learning.
Yeah.
I mean, the Terminator movies kind of put that fear into us many years ago.
But thank goodness, because we've got to be vigilant, right?
I don't know if it's not too late. I mean, you've just seen next level stuff.
Here's the problem, is if we develop this machine.
Conspiracy theories.
If we develop this machine, and I can only really talk on your show about this stuff, the rest of no one else will care except us and the people who listen to you guys. If we develop a machine that does all the work, it will instantly pose a huge threat to every other country and every other, you know, line of employment that humanity has. So either it has to be a decision that's made universally. Okay, when we get to this stage, we'll share it, open source it, make it available to everybody so that no one person has control of that creature that we're going to create that will do all the work. Or else it'll lead to war on a massive scale.
I would say you're right. There's only one problem, and that's called Google. Because they're already making everything available to everyone to quite easily do it.
But that's absolutely why we have to make sure that we don't take our eyes off the ball here.
Yeah. So there's that one. Sorry to jump in here. I think it's a Greek mythology thing. It's like, do we build the beast or do we build the cage that holds the beast?
Yeah.
Which one do you build first? And just to quote Jurassic Park, that you spent so much time wondering if you could do something, you didn't even stop to think whether you should.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those kind of thoughts that you need to put into it.
You're a repository of quotes today.
Digital philosopher. That, huh? Come on, let's talk about
it. I like this,
You said you went over with other South Africans.
Oh, by the way, hang on, before you get onto that, we went to a place called the Institute for the Future, which is in Palo Alto. Interesting place. It's a little office. It's an NGO. They say that they're not there to predict the future, but they're there to start conversations about what the future might be like.
That's
you know, Ethereum.
We're talking about the
world of blockchain and big data and all the rest of it, and how that could impact every aspect, including government, of society. And there are real world practical examples of this in Africa right now.
Yeah,
in Ghana they've got a situation with. I'm sure you've discussed this already on your show because it was familiar to me when we talked about it in San Francisco. They have a problem there with land, and people don't have the deeds for their land. and this thing will enable you, and people will then sell land, you know, and it won't end up being their land to sell.
Yes.
It'll belong to someone else because they have a problem with title deeds. So there's this new kind of digital land registry, which is on a blockchain, which will allow people to know for sure that the land that they're buying is actually the land of someone that they're paying.
So nice to hear someone else talking about blockchain.
Well, I figured this out, and I'm still, there's some areas that are quite sketchy, but essentially blockchain is just about distributed authority and verification.
100%.
And what that means in government terms, and can you imagine a government run by the blockchain? You'll have no corruption, and you'll have absolute efficiency.
Because well, that's why everything they're pushing will be back against it. I mean, well, if, they don't
and
want
they
it.
Will, but it doesn't. It's inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah,
they can push against it just like everything else that, you know, has stood against progress, and you'll end up being on the losing side of history. But wouldn't that be exciting?
It would
be a government run by blockchain.
I think it's going to have to come to that because, as you said, there's accountability and what's coming out now with Panama Papers and the likes.
People, look at the vote in Britain last week. It's a vote against...
We want to discuss that.
No, but it's an illustration. Look, this is where I come into your world, and it's an illustration of precisely the same problem. People have no faith in the established systems. They want a system that they can believe in,
and
a system that is universally true, scientifically, objectively provable, and blockchain gives you that.
Yeah.
So instead of voting for Trump and for Brexit, people might be more willing to throw their towel in with blockchain and give over to machines the ability to at least look after the details that end up being corrupted by humans.
They did that, Gareth. It's called SAP, and we all know how that turned out. Sorry, SAP. Yeah. I mean, that's a low blow.
You're very mean.
Come defend yourself.
I tell you what, it's a great program if you know how to use it, but when you want to try and change anything on it, you can't. And that is what blockchain's about.
Well.
The guys that you went over with, and this is what intrigued me. I mean, I think I sent you a message saying, please take me with because I'm your tech guy. I should be there.
Mm.
But as you said, these were entrepreneurs, and your whole purpose of going there was to understand what Google can do for us as businesses? Or?
It was sort of a two or three pronged thing. The first one was to just be exposed to the thinking of Silicon Valley. We met people like Bill Draper and Rudolf Buerta, who are venture capitalists who, you know, in Bill's case, he's the guy who, he was there at the start of Silicon Valley. He was one of the first investors in Yahoo.
Yeah.
He was the first investor in Skype. And so that's not even Silicon Valley, but it shows you how his interests have spread. And Bill Draper said that when he arrived there, it was orchards. It was Stanford University, and there were all these orchards. And as a result of Stanford being this factory of genius, really, a place where they encouraged people to think big and to come up with solutions to people's problems by using technology, they gave birth to, you know, Hewlett-Packard, to Google, to a number of these companies that would not have existed if it weren't for Stanford. But when he came in, there also wasn't a Silicon Valley to invest in.
Mm.
And as a venture capitalist in those early days, he said it was very, very difficult.
Yeah.
And suddenly, and he knew it changed at this point, the president of Goldman Sachs pulled up in a limo outside his little office, and he knew, we're entering the mainstream economy. But up to then, it had been, you know, them doing very well.
A bunch of geeks in one space.
Correct. In terms of delivering huge value, you know, they were making returns of 20% and up. And the stock exchange was doing single digits.
Yeah.
And that's why it attracted these bankers and their attention. But before then, it was a very simple, humble place where really a bunch of guys who were half hippie, half geek, came together to solve problems.
Yeah.
And look at what we've got now. I mean, now, you know, it's spread.
Well, it's global and it's
crowdsourced. There's San Francisco, there's Seattle, there's Austin, Texas in America that are the hubs for this kind of creativity. But now, it's attracting like a magnet,
mm-hmm.
people from all over the world who care about this stuff. And as a result, and thanks to the technology we've got now, almost everywhere else in the world, they're trying to replicate that model. So the first thing was to be exposed to Silicon Valley and the thinking that goes into it, which is a very collaborative way of doing things. There's no such thing as an idea that you patent and you keep hidden and a code that you develop that you're selfish and jealous about that you hide in a safe. It's about sharing
and so that you can improve. Letting go, yeah.
So that's the one thing. The other thing was obviously exposure to the venture capital, because there are a number of these business people who are ready to scale up in a big way and want international partners or international investors. And I think the third thing was to actually meet the people who are making the changes, people who are at the forefront of this kind of thinking, and to connect occasionally with South Africans who are there, like Vinnie Lingham. We didn't get to meet Elon Musk. But there are other people there.
You're going to have to go back.
There's some tremendously influential South Africans.
Yeah.
Rudolf Buerta is another one.
Yeah.
You know, it's Sequoia Capital. They're probably the most successful venture company in history.
Yeah.
They have on the wall behind you YouTube, Google, Apple, Oracle. Every company. Correct. Yeah. Every company that's in the S&P list of huge technology companies is something they've invested in.
I've heard from a mate of mine who's just come back from holiday. He said, I asked him how it was, and he said, where I went to, it was foreign but familiar. Did you find any of that coming back from this? Have you come back to South Africa and be like, wow, there's actually stuff now that I can see locally that's actually on that same path? Or are we vastly different? Speaking about futurology, are we moving closer or further away?
Well, again, to bring it home,
yeah,
I think that what we're doing here at Cliff Central from the point of view of creating this niched content and,
yeah,
and farming it out the way that we are, is that's absolutely something that I see is what they're working towards. I think we may even be slightly ahead of the curve there.
That's awesome.
There isn't anyone who's a hybrid podcaster, broadcaster over there who's got a large enough audience that aren't doing just niched content,
yeah,
that are able to straddle that divide. As we do, which is encouraging.
Yes.
But more and more I see, I mean, the ideas that some of these guys who are on the trip with me had and are already implementing and already have made successful businesses out of are every bit as good as the best ideas we heard from people who have just started their businesses over there, and possibly contain the seeds of something that could turn a few of them into billionaires.
Is there an appetite for South African and African businesses? I mean, I know a venture capitalist will put his money wherever the return is and whatever
the
books
they,
like.
Yeah, but they're not going to invest here.
So, because that's the question
I've always... You've got to move there.
Okay.
That's the short answer. I mean, there was a much longer explanation about how you can move your IP across. And, you know, the problem is that it's not understood properly by the powers that be here in terms of the legislators and in terms of the
Reserve. Because they don't know how they can get their piece of pie.
That's right. All they want is their piece of the action. And if you develop any intellectual property in South Africa, the Reserve Bank can decide whether or not it's exportable or not. Okay. On a whim.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are bankers at best. They certainly aren't experts in technology. They certainly aren't experts in code. They certainly aren't experts in...
Anything? Oh, sorry.
Well, no, they are experts in... I mean, they're experts in central banking.
The safe go-to is to shut it down.
But that's the point.
Yeah. Mm.
And if not to shut it down, to keep it here and keep it small. Which is, it's not the way that we've got to think. We've got to be outside of the box, and we've got to be looking in occasionally, but mostly looking out.
Yeah. Fear is the devil of innovation. If you fear it, then you're never going to innovate.
See, he's quoting again.
No, this is coming from Brett.
So the
that's his quote.
The question was two-pronged for the basis that that's what I'd thought, because I've also tried. I mean, we all have, especially being in the tech space. And you never get a positive response. I've jumped on planes many times and gone over and seen people. They're so just, the part two is, did they offer a solution? Did they say, we'll hold your hand and bring you across?
We met a firm of attorneys in San Jose who actually specialize in this kind of thing. And there are ways to do it. And you have to be really smart, and you have to try and do it before you've started anything that's really valuable here, so that you can get it out and have it owned by an American company, which you can own. It has to be there for anyone who is interested in investing in you to put their money into that. They're not going to put their money into South Africa's bank accounts.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. So you either need to develop your idea here, grow it slowly, and sell it off to someone over there, or build it halfway and be willing to take the knock in whatever tax that is, or you have to start it over there. And if you're going to start it over there, you've got to take all the commensurate risks there. And the fact is, you won't know the market as well.
Yeah.
You won't necessarily have access to capital. You don't have the network that you might have here.
Yeah, you're one in a million. Yeah.
But here, we have the advantage of having different kinds of problems to solve. The third world is full of massive opportunity.
Amidst all the chaos.
Yeah, because of that chaos. Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that there isn't a reliable electricity supply has opened up opportunities for people who sell generators and for people who sell battery packs. Mm-hmm. And it will turn them into very rich people.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at it as this market is worse than that market, you're missing the point. Yeah. There are ways to make this work for everyone.
Don't play first world victim in a third world country.
Thank you. Another great quote.
I like the one-liners because I'm
bubbling out of you.
When I talk with B1, I very much only get 20 seconds to say something, so I have to really make them count.
See, Gareth's making me subdued today. So the third part to the two-part question, you see, there's always more in South Africa. And this is the frustration, I think, a lot of people that do listen to our show, which would be in the same boat. Being in digital, and Brett and I say this the whole time, all we need is a computer and a connection, and we're online, and we're global. But now, the feedback that you bring back from, and let's be honest, these are the gods of capitalism and investment. It's silicon.
And tech, yeah.
And tech are saying, no, that's not the case. You still have to be here. You still have to come play with us in our space and our rules.
Well, they are if you want to be on that scale. And I think there are ways that look at NASPASS, for example.
Yeah,
and here's the interesting example that actually Rudolf Buerta brought up. Yeah. They've just opened their first office in America, only now, two months ago.
Okay.
Now, the reason they've done that is because they wanted to dominate the developing markets first, and they've very much done that. They've been very clever about buying up assets in the developing world that have positioned them as the fifth biggest media business in the world.
Yeah, that's amazing.
NASPASS.
Yeah.
And now only are they ready to start doing things in the developed world, because they're operating on the basis that if you can do it here, you could probably do it there. It's probably even easier.
Yeah.
Larger market, et cetera, et cetera.
And the challenges aren't quite as numerous.
They can't be bullied either.
And they won't be bullied. Money. And if you go in and you're already big, well, the world's your oyster, because they're all going to be running to partner with you, aren't they?
I just wanted to ask you as well, because I never got to go there, but I know you went to Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Now, Facebook intrigues me.
Yeah, does it?
It does, because when you think about what it is, what it was, and how it started, the spaces that they're playing in now must be quite interesting. With, you know, I don't know if it's more of a catch-up, because you kind of see things that everyone else is doing, but hey, Apple did that. I mean, Apple didn't really invent anything, they just perfected it. So Facebook's kind of coming through, that's my opinion.
Well, you know, there was an interesting comment made by one of the people on the trip, and she said, actually, Zuckerberg isn't a genius at all. He was just in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, there were a number of other potential social networks that could have become the Facebook.
Yeah.
And in fact, many people aren't even sure that Zuckerberg was the genius behind the Facebook.
The Winklevoss twins.
The Winklevoss. But the point is that Facebook is strange. You get the feeling that when you're on the campus there, that there's almost a messianic quality to this Zuckerberg myth.
Oh, wow.
That they talk about him, and you know, and 3 days ago, Mark went from there. He walked right past me over here. And they don't talk like that about the founders
and I
at
poked
Google,
him.
At Google. Well, this is the funny thing, is at Facebook, they were also saying that they use Facebook Messenger to communicate internally. They don't use like office email like the rest of us do.
But isn't that strange?
We ping each other on Facebook.
And
they come out of innovation, and yet they're putting themselves in their own created bubble.
Well, that's it. It's like those people who think that if you wear the corporate colors of your company every day and you read the corporate vision as you walk into the building, and that other kind of propaganda, that you'll end up being better at the corporation, and the corporation will therefore be better at doing what it's meant to do. I get the feeling that Facebook are almost out of ideas. I think the reason they're buying so many other things up is because they realize that they don't have very much else that's unique to offer.
But that's what I was saying. They seem to like almost copy. I mean, they're just saying, don't leave Facebook to go and do a picture. We have pictures now.
Yeah.
Don't go 360.
And
we've
good
got
for
it.
Them. They've got a survival strategy, but we don't know whether it's enough, do we?
Yeah.
And I do get the feeling on Facebook's campus that the people who work for Facebook are more interested in what's for lunch, because they've got this great canteen.
They can go to Barnes & Noble now.
Google's got an okay canteen too. We had lunch at Google. We didn't have lunch at Facebook. Okay. Oh, no, we did. We did it both. So I can comment across the board, good food is important on both campuses.
Yeah.
But on the Facebook campus, I was standing in the queue with all the other Facebook employees, and they weren't talking about work.
To meet the food.
At Google, they were talking about the food. At Google, they were talking about the work. Yeah. One guy, sort of an Asian-looking dude, is talking about, well, I just developed this thing this morning. I've got to show you. Can I come around to you just a little bit later today? And the other guy's going, yeah, 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 I want to hear about that. And you hear these, and they're not putting on an act. You get the feeling that Google is really an innovative company, a company for the future, a company that's got its eyes set on tomorrow. Mm. And you get the feeling that Facebook has got its eyes on today.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be insulting to Facebook. Yeah. I think that they're still doing, and they will do, creative and interesting things because they've got the resources now to do them. But I do think that if they hadn't bought Instagram and they hadn't done a lot of other acquisitive stuff, which they continue to do to their credit, that they would be finding themselves even more behind the curve.
Yeah.
No, that is interesting. I mean, I'm watching, and I use the word inverted commas, innovation coming through, but it's more of like the same, same.
But this is an obsession, this innovation. It's an absolute obsession. Yeah. You've got grown adult men who are, they got that wild look in their eyes because they're terrified that the next big thing is going to bypass them and make them irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And that is the danger of being in Silicon Valley, is you get the feeling, kind of like LA made me feel, 10 years ago when I went there for the first time. Everyone in LA is an actor.
Oh, yeah.
They're just waitering in the meantime or parking your car in the meantime.
What's
or whatever.
The Big Bang Theory? Right. She's been doing it for 9 seasons.
There we go. So, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
And I knew that before the Big Bang Theory. So that was my observation of LA. And in San Francisco, you get the distinct feeling that absolutely everyone there is convinced that they're going to find the next big thing.
They're all millionaires. They
but
just haven't done it yet.
Paranoid that they might not be. And it's crippling.
Yeah.
Because you see them and they're terrified that right now while I'm talking to Brett I could be discovering the next big thing, but someone else might already have, and oh my god, it's all gonna I'm gonna miss my chance, and I don't ever want to live like that.
Irrational phobia.
Yeah, but there's
actually a business. We can offer yoga courses for the people that have lost out on the next big thing for only $9.99 a month.
Oh, they'd come. And then you look at a company like Apple that's made so much money,
declared or undeclared.
Well, I'm just talking about what they've got. I'm just talking about what they've got in the bank, which they could spend now, and they don't know what to spend it on.
Yeah,
because you know they could buy. There was a rumor the other day Time Warner might be on their shopping list. There was a rumor the other day that Tesla might be on their shopping list.
Well,
what do they do?
Yeah,
because they make computers, whether it's a phone computer, whether it's a tablet computer, or whether it's a laptop or a desktop.
Yeah.
They make computers. They make very sexy computers. A lot of people love their products. A lot of people are very anti their products. But what are they going to do to take things to the next level? Because if I have another iOS update that does nothing, I'm going to start losing love for this brand.
You are getting one that does something. In September...
What's going to happen?
No, well, the whole focus now between the integration of Siri and third-party apps, they're actually letting app developers start to play. So we'll start to see a lot more integration where you don't have to open and close it. We actually spoke about this last week. And then, of course, the Mac itself, that will start to integrate properly now.
Well, they're doing unified stuff.
So we'll give them one more shot.
Okay.
But I don't think we're going to see hardware innovation, which is a bit sad. They're now talking about a 3-year strategy, not a 2-year strategy. So anyway, Gareth, we have to wrap it up. I mean...
Unless you want to keep talking,
shows.
I mean, it's your show.
I think you're bored with me.
No, we're not. But I'm already getting the Duncan saying, I know we're talking to Gareth, but we got to wrap it up. So we're going to have to wrap it up. Awesome. All in all, though, I mean, concluding, was it worthwhile? Did you come back with the innovation and inspiration?
Absolutely. You know, when you meet the best in your business, you can't help but compare yourself to them and find how you could get to that quicker.
Yeah.
Because we suffer from an insecurity complex about our position in the world because we're in the southern tip of Africa and we're not where all the excitement's happening.
Yeah.
But geography is the least important thing about what's being developed.
I have to ask you, did you ride the 6-seater bike?
I got on a 1-seater bike. No, okay.
Those colorful ones that came from...
Okay, no.
Yeah.
All right. Brett... Concluding thought, I mean, you've been so full of quotes, but we'll still throw you under the bus.
Oh, wow. Gee, thanks. Yeah. Basically, innovation is everywhere. So it's a matter of keeping an eye out for it, making sure that collaboration is part of your core, your repertoire. Don't be afraid. You've got to let go in order to grow. I'm going to throw a whole bunch in here, but literally it's about meeting new people, discovering new things, but also being open to push what you think is right.
And if you're going to be a tech millionaire one day, you're going to have to do it by using technology to solve people's problems.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah. Well, Gareth, thank
you.
It was truly great and awesome to have you here and your insights. And until next time,
we hope to have you back.
Keep your screen clean and your knob shiny.
This is CliffCentral.com. Cliff Central.
The revolution. I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.